cliffcentral.com.
I'm still at day one on the Gartner Symposium down in Cape Town, and I have Mary Ann and Gilles from Wipro Technologies with me. How's it, guys? How's it going?
Yes, hello.
Awesome, hi.
Good, good. Gilles, you have to come a little bit closer. And so
hello.
People can't see us, but we were actually set up for just one-on-one type interviews. So it's the first time we're doing a threesome down in the symposium with only two mics. So there we go. I did speak to someone from Wipro earlier, to Louise, and we were talking more about the mining and underground and how the sensors and Internet of Things and all those wonderful new techs come into play. But you guys play in a different space. I see that you play more in treasury and payments and blockchain. And I'm going to go straight to blockchain because that's something that everyone's like kind of heard of, but no one really knows what it's all about. So if either one of you want to just give us maybe a high-level overview of what blockchain is as opposed to just the Bitcoin and crypto environments.
So you said the two words together in the same sentence. Wow.
I know what it is, but a lot of people don't.
So Bitcoin and blockchain. Blockchain is the underlying technology that powers the Bitcoin currency. What is a blockchain? And I say a blockchain because there's like one... There's as many different types of blockchains as there are brands of people who are making blockchains. In general, a blockchain is a distributed database that has some nice mechanisms like security, non-revocability, performance directly built into them. But basically, a blockchain is a distributed ledger.
Okay. So, I mean, just for me to play it down, you know, at this show, I would assume most people will know what we're talking about here. I mean, there's a lot of CIOs, a lot of CTOs.
You would be surprised.
I was being polite.
No, what we've learned in many presentations is that you really do have to first get a level setting.
Yep.
Explain so that everybody, because what's happened is Bitcoin sort of took over when it started a couple of years ago. And everybody assumed Bitcoin, actually the words blockchain were rarely used.
Correct, and that's why, you know, I see
and
I get excited.
Yeah, the evolution over the last 2 to 3 years, most particularly the last year, has been for people to recognize that blockchain is the how, and Bitcoin and what you do on the blockchain is the what.
That's they actually a very good definition of that.
Yeah,
that's actually
keep
a
that
nice,
in mind.
That's a good simplification. I actually had someone referred to something called Pipcoin or Pipchain or something that's apparently come out of South Africa. I saw the eyes move a little bit there. I did some research. I wasn't that convinced. I don't know if you care to comment any further on that. We're unscripted and we're uncensored, so you can actually say what the hell you like. But you know, why I bring it up is I'd been talking about Bitcoin and then obviously the allied blockchain and the securities and the secure aspects thereof, I think, is the better way of describing it. And this person said to me, oh, we came across this local guy and he's 20 or something. He's a billionaire and he offers a 35% return on investment in month one. I'm like, well, then that can't be Bitcoin because Bitcoin's not about making a 35% return on investment. It's a currency. He said, no, you invest and you get. And I was like, no. So I started looking. But what I could see is he's just basically taken bits and pieces from websites and put them together and changed the name. Now, that's a problem. The reason I'm referencing it is that because the whole cryptocurrency aspect, not only for the world, but specifically for South Africa and Africa, it's new, which unfortunately means that there's threats. You know, when something's new, it's very easy to take advantage of people that might be wanting to dabble in it. So, you know, I think let's talk about what Bitcoin and blockchain are actually supposed to do, you know, and kind of turn away the return on investment discussions.
So first things first, Bitcoin is a currency, but not everywhere. It's a digital currency. Some countries, like Switzerland, have a status, given the status of currency to Bitcoin. Others, like the US, consider it a wealth. Even though in the last few weeks, there was a judgment in the US that assimilated Bitcoin to a currency. So the status in the US might change following that judgment, but...
But not a fiat currency.
Not a fiat currency, not a legal tender, okay, but a currency. For example, in Switzerland, where I'm based, we have already one virtual currency called the VIR, W-I-R, was created post-1930, the crisis. They wanted a currency that businesses could use to trade between each other that wouldn't fluctuate when the Swiss franc fluctuated. So they created the VIR, which means that the Swiss Bitcoin Association, we came to the FINMA, the Swiss regulation, and we said, well, we already have a virtual currency in Switzerland, and the definition of currency isn't linked to Swiss franc, but just to a means of doing of paying transactions. So there's no reason, except discrimination, to not allow Bitcoin to be considered a currency. So they thought about it really fast, and they said, yep, you're right, it's a currency. So Bitcoin in Switzerland is a currency. There's actually a city called Zug, Z-U-G, where you can pay some of your income tax in Bitcoin. Yeah, a small amount.
Okay.
But it's been allowed since April 2016, so it's a pilot. But you can actually do that. That said, for everything that's new, there's going to be people who are going to try to scam others with it. And it's not linked to the fact that it's Bitcoin or blockchain or blue or green, but it's because it's new and not everybody understands what it's really made for. So it's very easy. I saw a scam announced. My sister, who's in teaches at business school, Copenhagen Business School, sent me a mail saying, what do you think about this? And I'm not going to name anybody here, but it basically said, you missed the Bitcoin revolution. Use our system. Invest here and you'll get however much money back. It's a Ponzi scheme. It won't work, obviously. They're going to make a lot of money, but nobody...
I was going to say, they'll still make a lot of money because people are going to fall for it.
And it's not actually... They could have replaced Bitcoin by anything else. It's not linked to using Bitcoin. So we have to be really careful in differentiating the fact that Bitcoin is something that exists, and then the fact that, like everything that exists, some people are making really bad use of it and others are making really good use of it. I mean, I've seen people buy Volvo cars... just so that because they're so strong and solid, they can use them to ram into storefronts. So
we shouldn't be teaching people in this country that cars don't buy Volvo cars to ram into storefronts.
So Bitcoin is exactly like that. It's a really fancy thing. It's a distributed currency that people can use without having a bank account. It is instantaneous and borderless. It's not even cross-border. It's borderless.
Yeah.
My Bitcoin wallet on my phone doesn't care or know where I'm in South Africa or in Europe or in the U.S. When I do a transaction with it, it doesn't care who or where the other person is. It's just transferring Bitcoin ownership from one address to another. And then whether that person converts it locally in one country or another is irrelevant.
That's where the blockchain comes in, correct? So...
Well, yes and no. So to add on to that, there's the Bitcoin, the currency. There's Bitcoin, the commodity. And then there's the blockchain. So we also like to talk about what is the problem that you're trying to solve. What's the value that, you know, that the blockchain can bring? And then there's solving problems using the currency. So in South Africa right now, we are working with institutions that are paying each other in Bitcoin. There are several trading partners that are actually, because of the way supply chain and trade works, it's very cumbersome and bureaucratic. There are... financial institutions in Africa right now paying each other in Bitcoin in order to make the money move cross-border faster. And the problem they're trying to solve is moving the money cross-border. It's very painful in all geos, but especially in the African continent because of all the different rules and regulations that each of these, you know, pieces of the geo have to subscribe to. And then it becomes, now you're back to the how. Off the currency, it's the blockchain itself. And is it the right underpinning technology for... One of the questions that he and I like to ask all the time is, there's a skepticism and fear of the blockchain and Bitcoin because it's going to take away who's overseeing it, what are the rules and regulations it has to play by. A lot of people say blockchain should be regulated. Well, no technology is regulated. It's what you do on the technology that should be regulated, right? And so I think we're at that juncture where there seems to be more realization that you do have to separate the two in the conversation and that nobody regulates the internet. And the blockchain will ultimately never be regulated because it's what you do. The standards and the interoperability on top are what need to be overseen and regulated, but not the technology itself.
And so going back to the Bitcoin and blockchain, for example, what makes Bitcoin so powerful is that it is based on a blockchain, okay? And it's based on a blockchain that is running out of hundreds of thousands of machines that are sprinkled around the planet. And that's the thing. It's distributed among all of these machines. So there's not one geographical location where there's a centralized organization, but it really is sprinkled around the globe, which means that when I do a transaction, a Bitcoin transaction, I'm basically going to interface with the Bitcoin blockchain, by talking to the closest machines to where I am and say, I have a transaction. I would like the Bitcoin blockchain to please process my transaction. And by the way, I'm willing to pay a little bit of money for that transaction to be processed.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you do when you do a Bitcoin payment. You say, I have Bitcoins. They're attached to my address. Here's a few portions of a Bitcoin for the first 10 people who actually are ready to sign my transaction and make it valid. Machines are going to run race actually on the Bitcoin blockchain to validate that transaction, possibly to create a new block if the last one is full to store it in. And then when that transaction has been approved by enough machines, 10, that transaction is going to be immutably written into the Bitcoin blockchain, which means that the person on the receiving end of that transaction will then be able to do things they want with the amount of Bitcoins I've transferred to them. And because all of this is distributed on the planet, there's no notion of the money going across border. It does not know borders. It's like if it were in outer space.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I mean, this question is probably for you, Marianne, given the treasury and payment side. Let's say I want to buy a Bitcoin because I've dabbled with it before. Now, there's some prices of like $500 for a Bitcoin or 400. I don't know. It seems to fluctuate.
It changes every day.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the first question that is, I'm actually taking, I hate using the word real money, but I'm taking accepted currency, whether it's a dollar or a rand or something like that, you know, a known currency. I'm doing inverted commas in the air. And I buy a Bitcoin for $500. Now I have a Bitcoin. Okay. Now I want to go and buy a beer in Switzerland, and it's going to be the equivalent of 12 euros or whatever he tells me it is in Bitcoins. How do you start working that value out in the sense that because now I've taken real money, so let's just call it $500. I don't know what I get for $500. I get a coin. And now 12 euros is 0.111 of a Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and do that calculation in the currency that I bought the Bitcoin.
Yep.
Does that fit into your space? I mean,
it hurts my
head talking about it.
I know, but you actually are doing it. Everybody's doing all of this all the time anyway. It's called foreign exchange. It's called hedging. It's called holding assets. It's called market valuation and stock valuation. So you decided to spend $500 on a coin, and you chose to hang on to it. You could wake up tomorrow and that coin could be worth $700 or it could be worth $300.
Yeah.
Like any other commodity, asset, stock holding, right? So if you hold on to it, that valuation is going to come and go like it would any. If you want to turn it right around and spend $500 on a cup of coffee or a TV, you've now got a one-on-one transaction. So everybody does that today. You convert your dollar into a French, into a euro or into a rand, right, when you go to another country. What's the exchange rate? Yesterday the exchange rate was 2. Today it's 3. It really, if you use the Bitcoin that way, it really works on that kind of valuation. If you do it transactionally and rather instantaneously, chances are it's 1-for-1 at that moment, right? So that's the other confusing piece, is that it really isn't in some ways different. It's being done, and if I'm a treasurer and I decide to invest in Bitcoins and leave them sit there, it's no different than when I look at my treasury page and say, give me all my investments, give me all my holdings, give me the currency valuation of today, and they look at a big report with their euros and their, right, and Bitcoin happens to be one. They might place it in the stock, you know, category.
Sure.
Or they may place it in the cash, working capital cash flow case. It's all how they're using it, but that's true of all of their investments, right? This is just another option for that.
Right, so let's bring it full circle. Where does Wipro come into this? Because, I mean, that's obviously you guys work for this company.
I just wanted to add something before I say where does Wipro
sure.
coming. Is that okay with you?
100%. This is your interview.
Good. So if I am going to make a purchase of a beer,
yeah.
That's the example you said, and
well,
I'm
that's one I've seen online. It's like 12
right.
euros or
exactly.
0.1 the Bitcoin.
Exactly. So suppose you fly in right now to Geneva, and you have your Bitcoin wallet with a few portions of a Bitcoin on it. You arrive in Geneva, and you go to La Crêperie des Paquis, which is a crepe restaurant.
That was a pun for someone, but it makes a difference because none of us will get there.
it's a crepe restaurant in Geneva that accepts Bitcoin payment. They're very simple. And you go there and you buy a crepe and they will tell you it's 18 euros. And you say, okay, well, 18 Swiss francs, actually. And you say, okay, fine, I want to pay with Bitcoin. So they were going to give you their QR code, which is their Bitcoin address, and they were going to tell you it's this much Bitcoin. You take your wallet, you scan the QR code, and you say, transfer this much Bitcoin to this QR code. That's it. You've paid in Bitcoin. Now, the question is, are they interested in getting Bitcoins or not? There's two options. Either they have people they purchase flour and various basic products from in Bitcoins, in which case they might want to store these Bitcoins as such, or, and that's the case for that restaurant, they're not interested in keeping Bitcoins. They have a partner company. In this case, it's a small Swiss company called Bitty. They're a partner of Wipro. And Bitty is the market of Bitty is to convert fiat currency to Bitcoin and vice versa. So when I actually decided to pay Bitcoins to the QR code I was given, that QR code isn't the Crepri's Bitcoin account. It's a Bitty account that is associated to that Crepri. So I transferred the money in Bitcoin to Bitty at the rate the restaurant gave me, because it's the rate Bitty gave them. And the moment Bitty gets that money, they transfer Swiss francs for that okay. amount to the account, the bank account of that restaurant. So the bank, the restaurant is being paid in Bitcoin, in Swiss francs.
Swiss francs.
Even though I'm paying with Bitcoin. And this is instantaneous, well, within a few minutes. So even if there are minute fluctuations of Bitcoin during that time, which there will be, on average, it balances out.
And again, I just want to emphasize that that happens today, right? You want to take the U.S. dollar equivalent of 500 and you want it to land on the other side as in the $500 equivalent of Swiss francs. In between are foreign exchange agents and financial institutions that are doing everything that Bitty's doing. They're just doing it with the fiat currency. So it really aligns to some of the same transactions. It's the etherware, the cyberspace piece that gets people, you know, a little bit confused. But at the same time, it really, who's doing it's different. There's new entities doing it all the time that it's, you know, it's not, it's just a foreign exchange transaction.
If you were doing a payment with your credit card, the same thing would happen.
Sure.
You would see the price
I travel,
in Swiss francs,
I only
but
use
you'd
a credit card
in
when I go internationally. Before that reason, I try to get the most accurate exchange rate at the day.
Yep.
It can bite me. I mean, if I was in the 7th of November in the United States, I'm not quite sure what that's going to be worth. Or more importantly, the 9th of November.
But have you noticed
worse.
Lately when you go someplace, depending on, they will ask you at that point of sale, do you want to settle it in U.S.
Rands
or do you want to sell it in rand?
Yeah.
So it's increasingly more obvious to people that you can make a choice, whereas everything used to be behind the scenes, right?
Yeah.
You swiped it in France, got home to find out it was X many, it turned into X many rand, and you did or didn't get screwed, right?
The correct answer is do it in their currency, because you're still probably not going to get screwed. I mean, I've noticed,
that's what
a bit
I do.
Better.
I always do it in the local currency, not my
currency.
That's what
I do. That's
what I'm saying, also. Yeah,
I will ask.
I'm saying, if you're in South Africa, you do it in rands.
Yeah.
You don't do it back in your
right,
currency.
Right, because the exchange rate done by my bank and their clearing and is probably better than what the shop is telling
We could just do it in Bitcoin. So where does Wipro actually then, what is your mandate or role within that whole blockchain and treasury? Is it a software that you guys provide? Do you facilitate the transaction between real currencies and cryptocurrencies?
So
or do you just manage the blockchain?
It's a combination of many things and some things to come.
Okay.
So right now, we spend an extraordinary... There is a team. We spend an extraordinary amount of time on the advisory and strategic planning level, right? To your opening question, people still don't understand it. They're scared of it. Everybody else appears to be doing it. We must do something. Then it's like, but do what? So there's a lot of missionary work, a lot of missionary work. So the advisory and strategy piece is the busiest piece for us right now. We are not a software per se company. We are what we do is have a suite of partners like Bitty, like you know a whole bunch of others that we signed with. We're not going to go reinvent or build something somebody's already built in any product, in any vertical, in a treasury, payments, open source, whatever. We're not. We bring our resources to bear. And in that capacity, we can then either bring a partner in to solve, bring part of the solution. We can build for the customer. If we build for a customer, it's for that customer. We don't take it and productize it and go, it's very, we're not a products company. We're a
in
solution.
General.
Yeah, in general.
In general.
Yeah.
Happens on off, but our strategy is not to necessarily, you know, create a product and then, you know, go out and sell it. It happens in more like at a practice level.
So I mean, I think it's probably important because you at least now have people that understand that they can consult. I mean, that's probably the right word.
Right.
Between my strategy in that is that I'm now deciding whether I want to be a holder or a transaction or a combination of both, and you guys could obviously then facilitate that.
Right. Plus or minus to both. What is your strategic goal? What's your budget? And by the way, what problem are you trying to solve?
So one of the things that's interesting is that as a system integrator, that's our core business at Wipro. As a system integrator, we're technology vendor agnostic. So when our typical engagement with customers when we're talking blockchain, and by the way, most of our customers are talking blockchain and they get hysteric when you say Bitcoin. So we usually don't talk Bitcoin with most
customers.
Quite
funny,
huh?
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, well, they're
like,
so afraid.
That's just it's one of the layers on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but Bitcoin is a currency, and it's a sulfurous one, right? It's associated to
with
fraud.
Some bad press.
And bad press. So yeah. So they're looking at blockchains. A lot of banks, for example, are afraid of the permissionless blockchains where everybody can access the blockchain for privacy, obvious privacy reasons, and they can't really do know your customer on an open blockchain since you don't register for it. On the other hand, they love the permission blockchains for the opposite reasons and because they tend to be faster. That said, what we do with our customers is we basically are responsible for helping them identify which is the best type of blockchain to work with. Once they've identified a type that matches their use case, which is the best one to use. Today, we're actually very often looking one step above and trying to find use cases with them. Right? A lot of companies are looking at traditional use cases where they're taking their existing processes, say, for example, cross-border payments in the case of a bank, and wanting to see if they could move that to a blockchain version. And yes, you can. It works with a permission blockchain. It's faster. It's cheaper. It's more secure. It's completely distributed, so the operational costs for all of that is much lower than traditional centralized modes. But it's still using the common stuff. So one of the other areas we come in is we sit down with our customers and we help them reinvent, reimagine what their business could be using blockchain and doing things that today with the traditional technology they can't do. And that's usually involving permissionless blockchains like Bitcoin, like Ethereum, like possibly Stellar. And the nice thing here is that in this mode, we're really looking at the future. We're really building the future for our customers. So that's one of the key areas where Marian and myself get involved with our customers. Then, obviously, as a system integrator, we have people building expertise on these products. So we have labs where they practice and do proof of concepts and try things. They actually contribute measures they've made and report that back to the project so that it benefits the rest of the community because all of this stuff is open source anyway. So
sure.
So it's the natural way to work. You play with something, you find a bug, you submit a patch, or you just signal the bug if you can't code the patch by yourself. And so we do that as well. And then when our customer asks us, you know, can you do a project with us on the Ethereum network? He says, yeah, of course we can. We have the expertise and we have people who are ready to do that.
Cool. So, I mean, it's complex. It really is it really is a complex
and it's actually simple at the same time. What's complex is getting people out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Getting folks to maybe invest to fail. Just do a POC.
Okay, that one's never going to work with me, invest to fail. Hold on a second.
You know what I mean?
No, I know
don't
what you
be
mean.
Don't be afraid to invest and fail because you will learn something.
Yeah.
And you might get surprised even pleasantly, right? There's such a fear of doing something and have it not work, even though their measurement for success could be all wrong. And one thing we tell our customers all the time is they think they have very good minds, and they do. However, you can't grade your own paper. You can't use a bunch of inside folks, do a whole bunch of Googling, write a paper, and take it upstairs to a guy that has, or a girl, that has absolutely no idea what you're talking about, right? The internet, explaining the internet to a CEO in 95, we're right there right now. Okay?
Well, father-in-law at 79,
yeah. Right? So we spend a lot of time with, this is what it is, don't be afraid. And you, the only people that talked to you, CEO, were your own people. Were they validated? Was their work, you know, did somebody else with objectivity take a look at it, study your environment and say, you can do this, but you just need to do it a different way? Or everything you thought of is perfectly. There's this need to never want to bring in somebody else from the outside, but we can do it ourselves. You might not have the right people. You might not have enough people. You might not have enough resources. I mean, might not have that external experience that, you know, opened your eyes. And so that's the one piece we really try to emphasize is,
okay.
You know.
Cool. Well, thank you both for coming through. I mean, it was definitely enlightening. I said it's a topic I do like, but I still have a lot to learn about it as well. So that's great. Enjoy the rest of the symposium.
Sure.
I'm sure we'll see you out at one of the stands.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
A lot.
CliffCentral.com.